My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now. Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people make friends. I'm just trying to help you make a little money. My job is not just to entertain you, but to educate and teach you. So call me, 1-800-743-CNBC. Tweet me at Jim Cramer. I hate rooting against the U.S. economy, but that's what the bulls have to do going into tomorrow's non-farm labor report. We're so obsessed with what the big picture data might mean to the Fed that it even controls the action during the single most important week of the earnings calendar. Fortunately, today went our way with the Dow gaining 322 points, the S&P climbing 0.91%, and NASDAQ jumping 1.51%. But I think that's because we could breathe a sigh of relief that the Fed meeting was now behind us, or else we wouldn't have gone up. Why do we have to hope that tomorrow will bring a weak employment number with fewer jobs added, more modest wage growth? Because after today's beautiful absence of what we call macro numbers, the Fed obsession will start anew. Should they have left the door open for a raise? Should we have signaled a cut? It's all we talk about. Think about what happened yesterday and today. Let's start with the AM before the Fed meeting broke up. We had a not-so-hot market. It was pretty ugly. Why? Not earnings. No, we were down because people worried that Fed Chief Jay Powell might lower the boom on the stock market by saying something hawkish. There were rumors that he might indicate he favors raising rates, not cutting them. This new narrative alone is an incredible thing. We're once again hostage to everyone's worries about the Fed, which is another way of saying everyone's worries about inflation. There have been some moments where we see a consumer price index number that's boosted by one or two items, and it makes for a whole overpowering wave of pessimism that takes down everything. Doesn't matter if that thing is just insurance or utilities or rent or food. Whatever line item impacts the CPI, it's going to drive down a stock like Microsoft, largest company on earth, to ridiculously low levels right before it reported one of the best quarters I've ever seen. It actually reversed all that gain. Every day, practically every stock is caught up in this weird notion where we hang on every piece of macro data, every public statement by a major Fed official, regardless whether the company itself underneath the stock is impacted. Even when Apple reports a better-than-expected set of numbers after the close, like it did tonight, sent the stock higher in after-hours trading, I have no idea how long that can last if we get an overheated employment reading tomorrow at 8:30. Wall Street was terrified that Apple iPhone sales would collapse, especially in China. And while they weren't great, down 10%, it could have been a heck of a lot worse. Hey, it doesn't hurt that CEO Tim Cook predicted a return to revenue growth in the current quarter, along with an additional $110 billion buyback authorization. I think there's a lot to like here. You know I say own it, don't trade it. But that only matters on days where the big picture data let it matter. If it is up as big tomorrow as it is in the after hours now, it will only be because the non-farm payroll number was a cool one. Oh, I hate this dynamic because it makes us feel like companies have no control of their own destiny, and we don't have any control of our own portfolio. Everything seems hostage to which macro numbers the Fed really cares about. And we keep hearing that they care about this one, that one. Tomorrow we get the all-important labor report. And if you're bullish on stocks, you actually need to show that lower wage inflation and less job creation are here, because that's what will ultimately allow the Fed to cut rates. And that is what this market is about. Nobody likes this kind of market. No. I've never seen anything like this. Let me give you a real-life example of what I'm talking about. And why a lot of people are parking their money in two-year treasuries with yield almost 5%, because it makes sense. I want you to compare that to Amazon. I follow Amazon like a hawk. I like to say that I know Amazon better than most people on Wall Street, possibly including the analysts who solely focus on this one company. Amazon has dozens of data points that go into the quarterly report, but there are a couple that really matter. One is the growth rate of Amazon Web Services. It had been decelerating for some time, and that was beginning to impact the earnings. They told us things could get better. I know I fought them on this because I was really worried, but management presented evidence that my view was wrong. They turned out to be right. Amazon Web Services once again growing like crazy. That's so important. It's lucrative, very lucrative. The second issue was the seemingly endless losses in Amazon's international business. Next thing you know, it's actually profitable. Third, we need to see the price of packages keep coming down while we got our preponderance of same-day fulfillment. You know what? We got what we wanted. Three key metrics, three home runs. But Amazon had the misfortune of reporting the day before the Fed's press conference. So those blowout numbers ended up meaning very little to the share price yesterday. Amazon's stellar performance was a nothing burger until Wall Street got over its worries about Jay Powell's next move. Today, once we're past the big bad event of the Fed, so Amazon could rally more than 3%. And you know what? How long that's going to last? Until the employment number tomorrow. Now, the Fed meeting's always been an important event, but the constant obsession about it is a new thing. Some of it's the fault of the Fed. In a misguided bid for transparency, they've created a monster. Jay Powell doesn't need to hold a Q&A session after every meeting. He's chosen to be like the flying Willendas, doing a high-wire act without a net. That's an extremely risky maneuver that he has chosen. Jay didn't need to say that we're perhaps done raising interest rates last year. Think of it. Employment's incredibly strong. As long as we have strong employment, the Fed had no business taking more hikes off the table. Powell was so fixated on all sorts of data points, but all he should have been thinking about was employment, because the incredibly robust job market is the whole reason why we have inflation in the first place. People without jobs are a lot less likely to spend or buy cars or homes. Less spending is what allows prices to come down. I wish there were a better way to do it, but the only way the Fed beats inflation is by causing unemployment. Our best inflation fighters now have nothing to do with the government. They're the big providers of goods, Walmart, Costco, Amazon, with the latter actually being shunned by federal regulators because the Biden administration is reflexively skeptical of any business that they see as being too big. Amazing. Without any help from our elected leaders, all we can do is accept our fate from one tool, the Fed funds rate, to control inflation. Which brings me back to rooting against the American economy. If our sole tool to combat inflation is the federal funds rate, which is set by a committee of people who often disagree with each other in public, people who can't seem to keep their mouth shut, then the whole stock market ends up being a plaything for people who want to make bets on the Fed's next move. Or to put it another way, we all know that every single point gained today can be wiped out by the wrong employment number tomorrow. And right now, wrong means stronger than expected. It's absurd. It's the opposite of a stock picker's market. I remember at one time when stocks traded on the basis of how the underlying companies actually did. Then we started considering their sector more. In the old days, sector only controlled 50% of the action in a given stock. Then so much investment became passive investment coming in the market via index funds that the S&P 500 became the most important portion of the value of a stock, with sector second and actual performance of the company third. Now, because the S&P's price direction is determined by the Fed, then an individual stock price is largely determined by the Fed, too. And everything else is subservient to it, which means if the economy weakens, your stock, regardless of its sensitivity to the economy, goes higher. I'm sorry.
They know nothing!
Bottom line, we often get bad news as good news moments at this point in the business cycle, but it's rarely as excessive as it's been lately. I wish the market didn't work this way, but that's the reality. And it's why you need to bet against the U.S. economy tomorrow, if you're hoping for higher stock prices. Let's go to Max in Missouri. Max.
Hi, Jim.
Max, what's up?
We all appreciate everything you do for us.
Thank you.
I'm in a major house of pain on a company you've basically been in the hold camp on, even suggesting at one point they were a potential takeover candidate. For the mid to long term, what is your outlook for Etsy?
Okay, Etsy's executing not well. And I say that because when you read the conference call, they tell you they're not executing well. And it is difficult for me to figure out what they can do. I have been a backer of Etsy. I think it is a good company, but I just don't know how they can fix the darn thing. It's got great customers, it's got great loyalty, but it's just not working, and I don't know what to do other than to say that I still like it, but I have been wrong in liking it. I believe it's a good company, and I don't know how to fix it. Let's go to DJ in Colorado. DJ.
Hey, Jim. I'd like to send out a huge booyah.
Very interesting.
Lovely Red Star,
very
Colorado.
Interesting. All right. What's up?
Hey, Jim. I've always loved your wit and your spontaneity, as well as your obscure literary and cultural references.
True.
And the way you stump the guys in the morning show, which is why I want to ask you about SG, Soylent Green. No, just kidding. the stock I want to ask you about has one of the lowest P.E. ratios of all the energy stocks, at just below 8, with a forward P.E. of just above 9, which also makes it much lower than so many of these tech stocks with crazy valuations. The stock's had a little bit of a pullback lately and could be a good reentry point. The stock is VLO, Valero.
Yeah, it had a pullback. It's interesting. Marathon P had one, too. I think you're right. I think it is an interesting level to do it. They're going to make a ton of money. People feel it's just obviously just a commodity. I understand that, but I do think you have a winner there, and I would buy it. Let's go to Robert in New York. Robert.
Jim, what can I say? I haven't spoken to you in a while because you've made me so much money that I've just been relaxing a little bit here and there. But I'm ready, and you have what you have done for people is incredible. And you have.
Thank you. Thank you.
I mean, I want everybody out there in Comerica to realize that when you said pull, I remember exactly what you said about AI, and you said pull a little off, and you were dead on. You were not wrong. You were 100% on the mark.
Thank you, buddy. Okay? Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyway, Jim, last quarter, this company reported $648 billion in revenue in line with analyst estimates. Although statutory EPS of $1.91 beat estimates being 5.6 higher than what the analysts expected, they're closing 160 of their VillageMD clinics, which they invested over $5.2 billion. This company is Walmart.
Look, they made the tough decision, and it was the right decision. Unlike so many other companies, they are not afraid they've made a mistake. I really value that. It's one of the reasons why I think Walmart is a very strong and solid buy. If we didn't own Costco for my charitable trust, people know that I would own Walmart. Okay. Look, it's a bad news is good news moment in the business cycle. While I hate rooting against the U.S. economy, it's what the bulls must do going into tomorrow's job report. On Mad Money Tonight, Brinker, the company behind Chili's and Maggiano's, hit a 52-week high earlier today before pulling back into the close. But given that the company's in a tough sector, should you consider nibbling at the stock still? I'm checking with the CEO. And Viking came public yesterday in the largest IPO of the year. So do I think the stock can continue to sail higher? I'm going to give you my take. And DraftKings reporting after the bell, and I've got the post-earnings exclusive with the company's top brass. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
We're starting to see a clear divergence between the haves and the have-nots in the restaurant space. Take Brinker International, the parent of Chili's and Maggiano's, which is very much one of the haves. Tuesday morning, they reported an impressive quarter. 9-cent earnings beat off of $1.15 basis. Wow. And strong traffic, domestic same-store sales, especially Chili's. And that's why the stock jumped nearly 8% on Tuesday. This thing's up now 25% for the year. That is fantastic. But we got to ask, can it keep it up? And that's why we're checking in with Kevin Hockmies, the president and CEO of Brinker International, to get a better sense of the quarter. And I am so excited about this story. Mr. Hockman, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me on the show. We're super excited about the future on this brand.
Well, look, I've got to ask you right now, Kevin. You've got this big smasher burger. You've got an incredible deal. And I see, unlike what people may understand in the analyst world, that you were number one trending on Twitter when you announced this. That's not the Brinker of old.
You know, it's exciting. So, you know, there's this whole dialogue going on right now about fast food prices. And so we decided to jump in the fray. So this is the actual big smasher, if you can see that. This is almost a half-pound burger. It's got Thousand Island dressing, lettuce, cheese, pickled onions on a brioche bun, comes with fries. Wait, there's more. It also comes with chips and salsa, and you get a bottomless drink, and it's just $10.99. We don't think that, you know, we keep talking about it's unbeatable in the industry. We're now bringing new news to that lineup, the 3 for Me lineup at $10.99, and we think that we're going to have a big winner on our hands.
Well, you know what's interesting? I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, why is there this sense that you either have to be for the rich or for the not rich? How about for the everybody? And I know Chipotle feels that way, and obviously you feel that way. The price point that you're talking says to me, rich, poor, middle class, whatever, I like the buzz, I like the taste, I want to go to Chili's.
Well, there's two things I'll tell you that on, Jim. So one is, you're absolutely right. I think the folks that are going to win in this economy are the ones that meet all the customer needs, not just one end or the other end. And so, you know, for example, we call it the barbell strategy. And margaritas right now, so we've got a $6 watermelon Tito's Spritz margarita. And this comes with Tito's vodka, Luna Azul tequila, triple sec, our fresh sour mix, and obviously watermelon. And it's a humongous drink. I mean, we look at that thing, it's just $6. And then if you want something a little smoother, you know, we've got the hottest drink in America right now, the Casamigos margarita, I'm sorry, martini. And this retails for probably around $12. So, and that's for a guest that wants something a little smoother, Casamigos, it's a little more expensive. But that's the point. We're winning with all demographics right now and all income segments. And we think if we can continue to deliver for everybody, everybody wants great food, everybody wants great service, everybody wants great value, we're going to continue to win market share.
Are you ready for Cinco de Mayo on Sunday? Will you be able to handle the crowds?
Well, absolutely. You know, it's been interesting as we've kind of really gotten a lot stronger from a customer experience standpoint and winning with our customers. We're seeing on those holidays, they're getting busier and busier. So we think that Cinco de Mayo could be a huge, huge day for us, and we're going to be ready for it, you know, whether it's with our chips and salsa, our cold beer, or obviously our delicious margaritas.
Now, I am kind of in awe of something that you're doing. You're still TV for ads. But at the same time, for instance, we posted something when you were on, and you were our biggest Instagram hit that we've had. There is something going on. You mentioned it. You referenced it in your conference call. It seemed like people glossed over it. They shouldn't. It's your buzz factor. Tell us about having a buzz factor for Chili's.
Yeah, you know, obviously TV is still going to be the number one way you drive awareness really quickly. And we've certainly gotten back into that in a big way. And we've got some amazing ads going on. We're the big smasher right now, which really shows that incredible value versus what you can get in fast food. But you're also going to also have to have a big presence in digital. And so, you know, our social media marketers led by George Felix and his team, they're doing an incredible job really getting into that social media discussion, that conversation. And that's why we saw, you know, that number one trending thing on Twitter for our new 3 for Me offer with the Big Smasher. We're certainly seeing more and more engagement with our fan base. And I think you got to do both, right? You got to have, you know, that top of mind awareness on TV with kind of bigger dollars. And then you got to make sure that you're connecting with your guests on social media. And when you have, you know, deals like the $10.99 3 for Me, you know, it's going to be pretty easy to get chatter.
Now, I want to talk about, I hear what you're saying, and I like the simple nature of it. And I know when you came in, you made a point of making sure that there was simplification. I was dealing earlier in the week, no need to mention the name, but with a large coffee company that is making more and more and more different kinds of items. And I'm beginning to think that you have to be from a computer scientist from Stanford to be a barista. That is not the way it works at Brinker, does it?
That's exactly right, Jim. You know, since I started 2 years ago, we've limited over 20% of our menu. Why do restaurants don't do that? Is because you're afraid of losing sales. We've grown our sales quite a bit. You know, I was just talking with our VPOs here in Lexington, Kentucky. We're having a joint business meeting, and we've grown over $500 million of sales, you know, in the last 2 years. I mean, that's a pretty impressive number for a company our size. And we've been able to do that while cutting the menu. And what's happening right now is our guest experience metrics are going up. And because of that, we've got more repeat customers. And then we're going to continue to simplify. We probably don't have to trim the menu as much, but even prep steps can be simplified. So we have a new chicken sandwich that actually just came out with our menu drop 2 days ago. We've eliminated the pounding of the sandwich. That pounding is like the worst job for a team member in the heart of house to do. And that chicken sandwich is juicier, it's plumper, and it's more delicious. And that's also in our $10.99 meal. And then another one is we got rid of our thin lunch patty hamburger, which was a double burger. It was only 7.2 ounces. We now have 7.5 ounces going to the normal patty. One less thing to cook, one less thing to manage, one less thing to order. And you know what? When you make things simpler, you get a whole much, we get much better consistency. But the most important thing is you have team members that are happier and you've got guests that are happier. And that's what's happening here at Brinker.
It is not hard to understand. Complexity is the enemy. Simplicity is the friend. I want to thank Kevin Hochman, President and CEO of Brinker International, the best performer in this group, for coming on. And I hope you have a great Cinco de Mayo.
Hey, thank you, Jim. You too.
Absolutely. Great to talk to you, Kevin. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, a Viking never sailed with this much style. Anchors away on this week's big IPO. Next.
You may not have noticed because everyone was so focused on the Fed, much to my chagrin. But yesterday, we got the biggest IPO of the year when Viking Holdings, the parent of Viking Cruises, came public. I think this one's intriguing. It's a good option in a strong industry that doesn't have a lot of major players. Remember, I like the cruise lines because the post-COVID travel boom has proven to be remarkably durable, resilient. In fact, cruise bookings have been excellent, in part because it's the value-conscious way to go on vacation. Remember, people are really interested in the new frugality here. The only problem is that Royal Caribbean, Carnival, and Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings, the only three publicly traded cruise lines, pure plays before this IPO, each had huge runs last year. The bar's already set high. How high? Well, the Norwegian Cruise reported a mostly strong quarter with modestly weaker than expected revenue. I was shocked to see the stock down 15% yesterday. At this point, only Royal Caribbean is still up for the year, so maybe it might be worth swapping into Viking, as its stock has not had a chance to get overheated. But why don't you listen to it and make a decision if you're in Royal? This is a pretty popular brand, Viking. But if you don't know Viking, they're all about smaller ships, luxurious accommodations, destination-focused routes. Lots of river cruises in Europe, although they started expanding into ocean routes about 9 years ago. Then in 2022, Viking started offering expedition experiences. So smart. Like taking people to Antarctica. Different kind of vacation. Today, the company has a fleet of 92 vessels, 24 new ships on order, options for 12 more, not to mention routes that span all seven continents and all five oceans. I bet you didn't know there were five oceans. What sets this one apart from the other cruise lines? In its IPO prospectus, Viking says pointedly, Emily, quote, "We do not try to be all things to all people," end quote. "There are no casinos on Viking boats, no children either. And all cruises offer a single language experience by avoiding, quote, features that are unnecessary for target customers," end quote. The company says it can offer, quote, "a superior product at competitive prices," end quote. It's now the only pure play luxury cruise line that's publicly traded. I like that. Now, Viking points to the Condé Nast Traveler Reader's Choice Awards from last October, where it was the top-rated cruise line in the river, ocean, and expedition categories, which is the first time any one brand ranked at the top of all three categories. And I got to tell you, I follow those rankings really closely, and I've actually made decisions based on that magazine. So this is not idle. Others have clearly done the same. While Viking's a smaller operator, it's very good at finding a specific niche and then dominating it. For example, they're the number one player by far in the North American outbound river market, 51% share. Nobody else comes close. So it's got a good story, but what about the numbers? Last year, Viking put up 48% revenue growth with earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, up a stunning 197% year over year. And their margins are expanding like crazy. Management also gave some limited preliminary results for the first quarter of 2024. As you might expect, Viking's growth is decelerating as we move further away from the pandemic, okay? But it's still growing nicely. Viking's occupancy rate from 92.8% in the first quarter of last year to 94% in the first quarter of this year. Pretty darn good. Passenger sales increased by 13.6%. At the same time, they're talking about 13 to 14.5% revenue growth in the first quarter. While the company normally loses money in the first quarter, their operating losses are shrinking substantially year over year. And make no mistake, Viking had a nice $818 million operating profit last year. We're not talking about some fly-by-night SPAC here. Of course, nothing's perfect. Viking doesn't have the best balance sheet, but you know what? None of the publicly traded cruise lines have great balance sheets because it's a capital-intensive industry. Plus, Viking had to issue tons of debt in order to stay alive during the pandemic like the rest of them. But when you compare their credit metrics to the rest of the industry, Viking's balance sheet doesn't look particularly worrisome at all. In fact, compared to Carnival, Royal Caribbean, and Norwegian, I'd argue it's got the healthiest balance sheet in the industry. Certainly, it's got the lowest debt-to-equity ratio by far. So I like the story. I like the numbers. What about the stock? Is it worth buying here? And not here. Where? What's the thing actually worth? Okay, Viking's IPO was upsized from the original 53 million shares to 64 million shares. Instead, high demand. It priced at 24 towards the high end of the proposed price range. Yesterday, the stock opened for trading at $26.15, closed just below that level, $26.10. I like that. See, and then add another 3.4% today, 27.27. I don't like them too high. At these levels, Viking has a market capitalization of close to $12 billion, enterprise value of more than $15 billion when you include the net debt on the balance sheet. Now, to come up with a valuation here, we need to make some assumptions and do a little back-of-the-envelope math, figure out how much money these guys can make. Let's start with the assumptions first. Viking says they're likely to put up 13 to 14.5% revenue growth the first quarter, as I told you. We'll use the low end of that range to be conservative. Okay, we'll go with the 13. Then project that out for the full year. On top of that, let's assume that flat EBITDA margins, I mentioned the EBITDA before, which translates to $1.23 billion in earnings for interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. Using that sketchy estimate, Viking has an enterprise multiple of 12.4. Isn't egregious. Does represent a clear premium to the other cruise lines, which all have high single-digit enterprise multiples. So, by the way, the enterprise multiple, which is an enterprise value divided by EBITDA, it's often the best way to value companies in capital-intensive industries like the cruise lines that don't lend themselves to pure EPS kind of thinking. So, does Viking deserve that premium multiple over its friends in the industry? You know what? I'd argue it does. Viking's got a cleaner balance sheet than its peers, differentiated brand, caters exclusively to high-end customers, which I absolutely love. Premium is such a great place to be. Part of the business I expect to hold up better than the mass market set of things. Now, I'm going to do something that I usually don't do. I'm giving you my blessing to buy Viking right here. That's right here. And that's even after it's been up for a couple of days. It's not wild up. I like an IPO that comes here and opens here and then just does this. That's kind of my textbook Cramer IPO that works. Of course, small position here, maybe a pullback, get bigger. But I very rarely do this. I am saying Viking is a buy right now. I want it to pull back until the valuation is more in line with the rest of the industry, which would be about 20. But after what happened with ARM Holdings, where we only got in small, I'm not going to make that mistake again. 6 months later, from now, the lockup insider will expire. You get a chance to buy even more. Here's the bottom line. Even though Viking's somewhat hot start has made its stock more expensive than its cruise line peers, I am willing to pay up for this one because I think it's going to be a winner. It's my new favorite in a group that I have liked for ages and ages. Let's take calls. Let's go to Sam in New York. Sam.
Hey, Jim Cramer, how are you?
I am doing well, Sam. How about you?
Good. Hey, Boeing, buy or sell or hold?
I'll tell you the good news about Boeing is that they've got this guy Mollenkopf who's in there trying to get the right guy, okay? The bad news is the shoes never stop dropping. It's like Melda Marcus, you can Google that. It's a lot of shoes, you know? Birkenstock factory, I don't know. And I just keep worrying that every time I say, let's go buy it, someone then, you know, the next day they pick up the paper and says, well, there's 17 nefarious people who are doing bad things at Boeing. So I want to skip that. I don't like that headline risk. So I'm going to tell you that while I do think that it's probably bottoming, I don't think they know themselves where the bottom is. Brenda in Virginia. Brenda.
Booyah, Jimmy Chill.
Booyah, the chill man in town.
Booyah, I was wondering if you thought that Paramount was a good buy at this level.
No, we're gonna just say that, okay, that got a bid, and there's probably maybe not going to be that much of a bidding war for it, and we're done with PARA, and it was nice to meet you. Okay, even though Viking's hot start out of the gates has its trading at a premium to its peers, I got to tell you, I'm willing to pay up here for this name. I think it's a big winner. Much more Mad Money, including my post-earnings exclusive with DraftKings. Did DraftKings parlay interest in the NFL playoffs in a strong quarter? I'm going to dig into the latest with a stock that I know you care about. Then we've been focused on just how tough it is to be in the restaurant business, so I'm sharing how I size up the companies in the space and listing the stocks I have my own and the ones I like and the ones I can't even fathom. And, of course, all your calls rapid fire tonight's edition of The Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. Back in March, the hottest stocks in this market started rolling over, including DraftKings, the online sports book with a stock that's more than doubled last year, rallying another 40% in 2024 before it peaked at $49 and change in last March. In the following weeks, the stock pulled back to the high 30s, although it's recovered to $43 as of today's close. Then DraftKings reported and showed us why its stock's so hot in the first place. These guys earned 3 cents per share. Analysts were looking for a 17-cent loss. I mean, and they had much higher than expected sales, 53% year over year. Even better, management raised their full-year forecast across the board, which is why the stock's getting some lift in after hours. Still, it's several points away from its March peak. It's still down significantly from its all-time high set in 2021. So could it have more upside? Let's take a close look with Jason Robbins. He's the co-founder and chairman and CEO of DraftKings. Learn more about the quarter and what's next. Mr. Robbins, welcome back to Mad Money.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me.
All right, so, Jason, this is a huge surprise profit. So we just got to ask you, what's the make of it? How did it happen?
Well, you know, I think the business continues to just grow fast, and I think the team is executing great. The market is growing, and really just, you know, really pleased with the performance. We continue to exceed our expectations. That's why we're raising our guidance so significantly for the rest of the year. And, we're really excited about the trajectory of the business.
I do not blame you. I'd like to know how things have changed since the Supreme Court said that gambling was fine, because it seems like initially there was this giant land grab. Now it does seem to be pretty rational. Has that changed?
I think so. I mean, I think a lot of it was a combination of, you know, early in the industry, and also we had a pretty irrationally exuberant market in 2020 and 2021, and I think that fueled it. And now I think everybody's very focused on the path to profitability and also on continuing to grow. And I think we've all realized those things do not have to be in conflict. You can both, as we showed this quarter, put up really nice growth numbers and achieve profitability and continue to increase your margins, and that's what we've been doing.
So when you're a customer acquisition for, say, North Carolina, it becomes a pretty good decision based on the lifetime value of a gambler.
That's right. So, I mean, we are still investing. And, you know, in the quarter, as you noted, we launched North Carolina. We also launched Vermont. Both of those were negative for us. But overall, the company is obviously doing really well. And I think exactly what you just said in so many other states is happening where the paybacks are there. And that's why the company's been able to achieve adjusted EBITDA profitability.
I want to talk about something that I think a lot of people may not realize. There was a gambler who also played basketball, Jontay Porter. And I think what he may not have understood and what the players in sports may not understand is that you work with the regulators. You actually flag people. So perhaps maybe the players should think twice and not be banned for life, because you're somewhat like an SEC and a brokerage house. You're not just you're mindful of the bets that are being made.
What you're talking about is exactly one of the many benefits of the legal market. You know, you've seen past scandals where sometimes things can go on for years or even longer. And it finally maybe gets caught. Maybe it never gets caught. In our, you know, legal regulated market, when we see suspicious activity, you're absolutely right. We report it. And, you know, look how quickly things are. It's unfortunate it's happening. But I think you're right. I think, you know, a few of these things happen and the consequences are severe. And more importantly, people realize they can't get away with it. In a now legal market, they're going to get caught. I think you'll see a drastic decline. I'm not going to say it'll never happen again, but, you know, really showing that we are catching this and that people are suffering severe consequences for making these bad decisions, I think, is the answer.
Yeah, and I think it's great, because I think that in the old days, we used to read about people who rigged things, and they rigged and rigged and rigged and never got caught because no one ever knew. It was all done in the dark. Now, something is not done in the dark. Dave Portnoy has been on the show a whole bunch of times. Everybody follows him on Twitter. He's both a colleague now with the team, but he also has been bragging that he's been beating the heck out of you. How do you rationalize the fact? How do you deal with the fact? I mean, the guy is on a hot streak, even though he's going with a lot of the favors.
Yeah, you know, I thought Dave was just going to cost us a few bucks in marketing, but turns out he's you know, he's winning a lot on the betting side too. He's been on an unreal hot streak. I mean, you know, really good for him. I think it's listen. Obviously, we love to see people win. Some people are going to win sometimes. Some people aren't. And, you know, it's actually an extra benefit when that person happens to have a big following and is getting you nice, some nice publicity around it. So really happy for Dave and glad to be partnering with Barstool.
I don't blame you at all. It's still the most fun sight to watch. Now, I wanted to ask you, this weekend we have the Kentucky Derby. And I hope one day I can just go into my DraftKings site and it's there. But you do have a link up with Churchill Downs, correct? So people who want to gamble can place bets on what's basically just a coalition you have with them. I don't know how it works.
Yeah, we have a separate app called DraftKings Horse. So, you know, you can go and play with DraftKings, but you're right, it's through a partnership with Churchill Downs. And we're working actually on integrating that better, so it won't have to be, you know, a separate thing. You can use the same funds and the same account. So that's something we're actively working on, and hopefully by next Kentucky Derby, we'll have that.
I hope so, because we're all going to our Derby parties to make it easier. Now, one last thing. International, I understand you might be interested. There's talk about UAE as a place to go. What's your plan?
Well, right now we're really focused on the U.S. Obviously, it's our job to make sure we're aware of everything going on around the world. And if there is an appropriate international opportunity that we should examine and consider, then we will do so. But the bar is really high, given we think it's actually a big advantage for us that we have this, you know, sole focus on the U.S. If you look at most of who we're competing with, whether it's a totally separate line of business or a different geography, there's something else. For us, this is it. We can tell our whole company it is about winning in U.S. online gaming. And I think there's a lot of power to that. I think there's a lot of power to that focus. So, you know, it's not to say we would never do anything, and certainly we will continue to look at opportunities as they arise, but we're also going to have a very high bar and be very selective about any moves we make internationally, and we'll have to do it at the right time, too.
Fair enough. I just want to be sure. I wanted to get that in there. My colleague, Contessa Brewer, covers this industry very well, as you know, and I certainly want to share anything she's given us. Well, look, I want to thank you, and I do want to disclose to people, I've had a relationship with DraftKings. I have Bull Market Fantasy, and a lot of it is because, look, I like fantasy, and I know that these guys have a great fantasy site. So there we go. That's Jason Robbins, co-founder, chairman, and CEO of DraftKings. Jason, I love when you come on the show. Thank you so much.
I love coming on. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Money's back in for the break.
When we return, master the markets one stock at a time. The Lightning Round is up next.
And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the lightning round, Kramer. Let's start with Jay in Florida. Jay.
Big booyah, Jim. This is Jay from Amelia Island, Florida.
Excellent.
I'm considering buying One Main Financial.
Okay, One Main, that high yield tells me that it's a little bit riskier than people would like, but it's a personal loaner. But you know what? I think the Fed is going to lower rates, so I think it's going to work for you. Let's go to Camden in Massachusetts. Camden.
What's up, Jim? How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you. So I just had a question about, with SoundHound's recent partnerships and expansion into areas like automotive and smart speakers, do you think its growth potential is as strong enough?
It's got to make money. It's losing money. It's been around forever. It's not making money. That's no good for me. Let's go to Kevin in Missouri. Kevin.
Hey, Jim, I love your show.
Thank you.
Cracker Barrel, Old Country Stores. I watched it drop steadily from 3 years ago, about 170 right, to the 50s now. Now it sports a 9% dividend. They got good food, seem to have good management, and they have real estate on their balance.
I know. Let me do this. I myself have been amazed that the stock has dropped like a rock, and I've been amazed because I think they can cover that dividend. We're going to do some work on that because I used to recommend the stock, and it has been horrendous, and I haven't looked at it in many a year, so we'll come back and do that one. Let's go to Brendan in New Jersey. Brendan.
Hola, Jim.
Hola.
I have a question about an Argentinian company, which I know nothing about.
All right, fair enough.
After this guy, Javier Milei, got elected, I mean, this stock seems like it's only going up. And I'm talking about Grupo Financiero Galicia.
Oh, man, this is another one that I don't understand. I mean, look, I got two in a row, but it's okay. I mean, it's the right lightning round. That's the way it is. It's easy come, easy go for me. I got to look into this company. Why is that selling where it's selling? I have no idea, but I will come back with an answer. Let's go to Fernando in Florida. Fernando.
Yes, booyah from Orlando.
Oh, how's it going?
Very good, Mr. Kramer. How are you doing?
I am doing well, thank you. What's happening?
My question is GM, General Motors. Time to get out.
I like GM very much. It's inexpensive. Mary Barr's doing a terrific job. I think you're in good shape there. Let's go to Dan in Illinois. Dan.
Hello, Mr. Kramer. This is Dan Ohl from Rockford, Illinois.
And how are you?
Great. How are you doing?
Good, good. From my friend Jim Stewart's from. Let's go to work.
All right. Screw capital of the world and home of the Rockford Peaches.
I went to
Loras College in Dubuque, Iowa. And there's a headquarters of a regional bank there called HTLF.
And that HTLF is a very good regional bank that has got good good numbers and is very conservative. And I think you're in good hands with that one. Let's go to Jim in Florida. Jim.
Jimmy Chill. This is Jim from Lechateau and Pelican Marsh in Naples, Florida.
Wow. What a mouthful. Okay. What's up?
I want to start off by thanking you and your staff for all your help throughout the years.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
I've been watching since Kudlow and Kramer, which my dad got me to watch at a very young age.
That's just people know. That's 24 years ago. Just people know.
My question is on a wind and solar company, which I started acquiring several years ago. I've added to my position as it went down. The stock is down 46% over the year. Pays a good dividend. Buy, sell, or hold NEP.
It's losing too much money. Maybe I'll put them on, but I mean, the revenues are good, but it's losing too much money for me to recommend. I'm sorry. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, check please. Kramer on which stocks are feasting in the battleground restaurant space when we return.
What's the toughest business I've ever tried my hand at? the restaurant business. So much has to go right. Labor, check, service, point of sale, price of food, hours, approach, pickup, delivery. No matter what I did, I couldn't get the mix right. The price of food versus drink, the number of hard drinkers thrown by beer, tequila, mezcal, and chips versus families who eat a ton but barely touch the liquor. Which would be best? Where's the money best made? I thought it was liquor. It turned out to be families. The whole thing's ridiculous. But one thing I did know when I was running a restaurant, my year-over-year and quarter-over-quarter numbers, I knew those cold. Not to mention my link month business. I drove people hard to meet the numbers, and in the end, I ceded control to my best manager because he was just better at it than I was. I bring this up because we're seeing some wildly divergent numbers from the restaurant companies, and the difficulty of this industry helps explain why. The best way to analyze restaurants is to be clinical. We look at same-store sales because if we just looked at actual sales, we'd be thrown off by any chain that's adding lots of new locations or closing lots of old ones. The same-store sales, on the other hand, just don't lie. So who's got the best numbers besides Brinker? We just mentioned them earlier, which, by the way, is a total winner. First by a mile is Wingstop. Yeah, this had 21.6% domestic same-store sales growth, which is inconceivable, especially because they're also lapping some amazing numbers. How did CEO Michael Skipworth do it? All right, this is interesting. I mean, wings are hot, right? Both literally and figuratively. You see, the prices are low. Most important, it's almost impossible to get a Wingstop franchise without having already put up great numbers at another restaurant chain. They're very good at screening the franchisees. People put up, they have to. They just can get anyone they want. Why? Because a Wingstop makes almost $2 million per store. Second is Chipotle at plus 7%. By the way, their market cap's almost the same as another company I'm going to mention soon. Chipotle has got the growth came from higher traffic rather than higher prices. We like that. They did raise price in order to offset higher costs, though. But you know what? It didn't matter, especially in California, where restaurants are being hit with a new $20 minimum wage. It hasn't hurt sales. That's amazing. Fresh ingredients, terrific limited-time offerings, amazing ones, superior store management by people, by the way, who are incented with stock. I like that. Third's Domino's Pizza. Had been in a rut under previous management, but 2 years ago, Russell Wiener came in and lit a fire to a franchise pizza chain. And you know what? It's working. The company's racking up an impressive 5.6% same-store sales growth for the quarter. I think his bold decision to link with Uber Eats for delivery was brilliant. The prices here are perfect for a cash-strapped consumer. I like the banana peppers, and their app is amazing. Next up, Pat Doyle, who engineered a legendary turnaround at Domino's 14 years ago. He's become exec chair of Restaurant Brands International. I would not be surprised if he's now really running the show over there because the numbers are that good. Tim Hortons is up 6.9%. Burger King up 3.8%. He's not happy with that. 3.9% U.S. Popeye's up 5.7% and 6.2% here in the U.S. Tim Hortons is on fire because people love the coffee, the pastries, the price. Doyle's working hard to expand Popeye's as their chicken's been a big hit overseas. But its domestic same-store sales growth at 6.2% reminds me of the great numbers Popeye's used to put up when it was still independent. Those are the winners. What about the losers? Yum Brands failed to deliver, put up minus 3% same-store sales globally. Taco Bell plus 2% in the U.S. Pizza down 6% domestically. KFC down 7%. KFC numbers stand in contrast to Wingstop, don't they? Making me think that something's going awry there. Taco Bell offers terrific value and a nice remodeling effort. Pizza Hut's been a lagger for ages. It's time to just spin it off like Red Lobster for DRI, for what Darden did. The real disappointment, though, was Starbucks, with a 3% decline in same-store sales, which took my breath away, frankly. The company's shocking fall from grace is stunning, a function of high price, terrible throughput, and way too many offerings for the staff to know how to make them with any alacrity. The real problem at Starbucks is, though, somehow management believes business is better than ever. There are industries where you can get away with being in denial about your performance. But as I know all too well, the restaurant industry, it ain't one of them. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise you I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.